It is Monday, so of course we got to talk some NBA basketball coming up tonight right here on KOAL. Utah Jazz are going to make their return. They've hit the 60-game mark, sitting at 18-42. We get the Jazz and the Nuggets tonight. Live coverage is going to begin at 6:50, and then David Locke, Ron Boone will have the play-by-play call for you at 7. We'll talk about the Jazz a little bit coming up here in the final 22 games, but I definitely want to get into the statement made by the New York Knicks. And joining us right now to have that conversation, we have our NBA analyst. He is James Holis. James, always great to get you on.
Always good to come on after an amazing weekend in sunny San Diego. Sorry to brag to the rest of the country that, you know, we have 75 and sunny. But the NBA season's also getting hot right now, so let's talk about it.
Yeah. You know what? I'm an LA guy, but in the same sense, don't get it twisted. I think anyone who is anyone would rather be in San Diego, right? I mean, that's common law.
I mean, I'm biased. I've been here for almost 20 years now, but there's not many places in America that are more beautiful weather and better food and just a great city to be in.
James, I do want to get your perspective on what's going on right now in the Eastern Conference, and I want to start with the New York Knicks. I think when we get down to the final 20-game mark, I can look more at individual games in the NBA and say, okay, this is legit, right? I mean, for me, the way I kind of evaluate things, I look at it on a week-to-week basis for most of the season. It's just the way the game is played. But I think anytime you have a marquee matchup, and we look at New York and San Antonio, and no one was hotter than San Antonio going into this game. What I saw from the New York Knicks as they ended what was an 11-game winning streak for the Spurs was outstanding defense by Mike Brown's unit. And when we hit the 60-game mark, that means an awful lot, at least in my mind. I think we saw what the Knicks are capable of.
The Knicks are a strange case because, absolutely, they've beat the Spurs now twice in pretty convincing fashion. We know that they had a nice run earlier this year where they stacked a bunch of wins. But they're a little bit Jekyll and Hyde, right? They also had a stretch earlier this season, I think earlier this in 2026. They looked like they couldn't get out of their own way. They were Keystone Cops. So I think they still have a lot of questions. Just like the city they play in, they never sleep. They're up and down. They're all over the place. On one hand, I want to say we probably shouldn't assign too much value to a regular season game in February. But another one, like, it is. It's a marquee matchup. These are measuring stick games for teams. On the third hand, on any given night, things can just happen. The Spurs didn't quite have it. De'Aaron Fox and Castle were, like, historically bad, which credit to the defense of the Knicks, but sometimes players just have games, especially when you're in New York, which isn't quite like Miami or L.A., but there's still a certain amount of nightlife that may or may not affect things. So, but you know what? The Knicks passed the test. They stepped up. If we're going to say the statement game, they made a statement.
In terms of what that loss means for San Antonio, again, we get down to the final 22 games of the season. They're trying to run down Oklahoma City, and quite frankly, they're running out of time, right? I mean, they have to have a nice stretch. They got to put together another 7-8-game win streak if they want to be in the conversation. So I guess the question is, how important would home court be for the San Antonio Spurs if they were to get the Oklahoma City Thunder, let's say, in the Western Conference Finals?
I take a really holistic approach when it comes to a team like the Spurs. Zero playoff experience for their guys, for the most part, right? For their key guys, other than De'Aaron Fox. We know that Wembanyama is just starting his NBA journey and is already basically looking like a superstar. So everything they do, I think it almost has like the bumpers at a bowling alley. All of this is fun and games. Things don't get serious for them for another year or two. So this is all part of the exploratory phase. Of course, it's important to try to win. I think they still have a lot of passion. They're very hungry. They're still kind of learning the ropes. So this is a nice measuring stick game. But I think as far as even seeding, sure, I think they're 3 games back from the Thunder, and the Thunder have had their own top parts, but I think they're still like the class of the NBA.
Yep.
It's all important, but in the big scheme of things, I don't think it's that important, right? The big thing with the Spurs is keeping Wemby healthy, getting reps for Castle and for Harper, and just make sure that the guys are learning winning basketball. And part of that is also losing. So I think even in a loss like against the Knicks, they can take a lot of value, right? So I don't think it's as important as maybe a team like for OKC and for the Knicks.
Again, James Holish joining us right now as we talk NBA basketball. James, I do want to talk about the play-in teams. Okay, because again, down to the final 20-game mark, I think there's some room for movement in the Western Conference. It's not a foregone conclusion that the Lakers would keep a top six seed. But as it sits right now, it's Phoenix, it's Golden State, it's the Clippers, it's Portland. We go to the Eastern Conference, it's Orlando, it's Miami, it's Atlanta, it's Charlotte. We can't say that Orlando is going to be a playing team. They have the opportunity to catch Philly. We'll talk about that in a moment. But as of right now, that's what it's looking like. So let's start in the Western Conference. The Golden State Warriors right now, 2.5 games up on the Clippers. We find out today Steph Curry is going to miss at least another 5 games with his knee injury. Are they in danger of falling below the Clippers, or are you comfortable with where Golden State is at right now, which seems to be the 8 seed?
They are absolutely in danger of it. They basically have the same amount of losses as the Clippers in Portland. I say that, but now I look down, I realize it's behind them.
Yeah.
Memphis, it's Dallas. It's New Orleans. Let's be real. There's no real danger there. But we also know without Jimmy Butler, this season is basically a ship that's sinking, right? And for the Golden State Warriors, without Jimmy Butler, even if Steph comes back, even though they've shown little signs of life here without Steph right now, they have a couple good wins under the belt, surprising wins. Let's talk about the elephant in the room for Golden State Warriors. It's Draymond Green. With Steph or without Steph, they have been better without Draymond Green on the floor. They've really struggled offensively with Draymond as teams really start ignoring him and just leave him wide open the perimeter. He's not, you know, he's obviously slowed down a step. His defense has even slipped a little bit. And the turnovers can be a problem. So we got to talk about it. They've been better with Al Horford in the lineup as far as, you know, all the metrics and even just how they play. The ball moves better and everybody's shooting, so... That's the real thing with Golden State moving forward. Well, what do they do with Draymond Green?
I don't think they're in danger of falling out of the 10 seed. I mean, I don't see that happening. But when we talk about the play-in teams, I think sometimes it gets overlooked at what an advantage it is to be the 7 or 8, right? I mean, you do not want to be in that 9 and 10 spot. That's a very difficult spot to be in. Let's say for all intents and purposes, let's say they stay the 8 seed. They get Phoenix in round one, or in the play-in round one. If they win that game, they would go on and be the 7 seed. Regardless, you're getting San Antonio or Oklahoma City in the first round. If Steph is healthy, can Golden State be I don't want to say a hard out, because I don't believe they would be, but are they a team that could steal a game or two? Or is it simple? Whoever gets that 7-8 spot in the Western Conference, it's a 4-game sweep, 5 at the most.
Out of respect for Steph Curry and the legacy of Draymond Green, if they line up with San Antonio, they have a chance to steal in a game or two, because we know Draymond can dig deep, and, you know, for an individual game, for an individual quarter, he can find that next gear, that old school Draymond gear, and he's going to bring it against a guy like Wembanyama. So they definitely have a chance. Steph Curry is that great. I've never been the biggest Steph guy, but I got to acknowledge his greatness. But without Jimmy Butler, they don't have the firepower. They don't have enough high level talent. Guys like Gui Santos and Pods play, you know, sure, fine regular season guys. I don't trust any of those rotation guys other than Steph and Dre really in the playoffs. So it's funny, we're to the point, like, hey, Steve Kerr said it himself, this is a dying dynasty, and, you know, they're going out with a whimper, not a bang.
Let's move over to the Eastern Conference. Is there a bigger disappointment right now than the fact that we are talking about the Orlando Magic being the 7 seed in the Eastern Conference? This is a team that a lot of people were excited about. They went out, they moved a lot of pieces to bring in Desmond Bane. I don't think everything they did in the offseason was to be 31-28 as we hit the early stages of March, but as it sits right now, this is a play-in team.
So the optimist will say that all progress isn't linear. All evolution is linear, and this is just part of the learning of the Orlando Magic. It sounds like a dip, and next season will be better. But a realist, like me and you, I think we look at it, and yes, 100% disappointment this year. They made a tremendous move to bring in more perimeter scoring, try to modernize the offense. But the real culprit, is as much as we, you know, people have been talking about Paolo Banchero and his regression, injuries, right? They're still down Mo Wagner, they're still down Franz Wagner. Jalen Suggs in and out of the lineup perpetually. Key guys missing a lot of time. Even Paolo Banchero had an injury, and he hasn't looked quite himself sometimes. So it's disappointing, because I think around this time last year, we were talking about them maybe in the same breath as as an up-and-coming Detroit Pistons team. But Orlando has really, really, really taken a giant step back, and they're about to have these extensions kick in for Wagner and for Bonchero about to kick in. So moving forward, they got to show some progress, or they have some really tough decisions to make in the next 8-9 months.
Speaking of injuries, and we can kind of relate this back now to the Eastern Conference as we were talking about Steph a moment ago, Joel Embiid's going to miss at least 3 games with an oblique strain now. He was hurt during their loss, he was hurt actually during their win over Miami, but did not play in the loss yesterday to Boston. He's got to be evaluated again. If you are Philadelphia and you do not have Embiid, I think there's a real threat there, right, for Orlando to jump up and knock Philadelphia into this play-in round. I mean, right now, I think it's a game and a half is all that separates them. And again, James, we get down to the final 20 games, there's got to be urgency in that realm.
I can't wait. Well, I can't wait. I don't want to say I want to wait for the end of Joel Embiid's career. But we're going to look back at it, and it's going to, the autopsy of his career is going to be so fascinating because one of the most talented players, and we've always waited on that talent, but then injuries kept popping up, and this is just another case. Bad, bad luck, injury luck for Joel Embiid. Philly at one point seemed on the cusp of really kind of stepping to that next level, but they got to have their most talented player on the floor, and Joel Embiid just can't stay on the floor. If I wasn't a Celtics fan, I'd feel bad for him, and I still feel bad for him as a human, right? The Sixers, I don't know. Maybe when Paul George gets back after his suspended for steroids, something looks different. But, yeah, the Sixers are just one of those teams, and that's why the East is going to be an afterthought compared to the West because they have so many flawed teams that just can't put it all together.
If it was Philly with a healthy Joel Embiid at 6, or let's say something happens and they climb Toronto and they grab the 5, does Philly have a chance with a healthy Embiid against either Cleveland or New York in a 7-game set?
I got to say they have a chance because the word I think about for all three of those teams is volatility. On any given night, they can go toe-to-toe with the Thunder and look like, hey, we're contenders, we're here. And then they can go and lose to Atlanta Hawks for whatever reason because, you know, players aren't available or just Cat takes 5 shots. So volatility is the answer. So if you're betting on James Harden or you're betting on Karl-Anthony Towns or you're betting on the health of Embiid, it's basically like you might as well just go ahead and shoot yourself in the foot because that bet's probably not going to pay off. But one of them has to come out on top. So I don't trust any of the three. I think, though, I'm going to give the Knicks the slight advantage just because last year, what they did last year. And Brunson, I think, is the most reliable star out of all those people.
You mentioned James Harden. There's an injury that's popped up there with him as well. It appears that he is going to play, but in 8 games with Cleveland so far, he's averaging about 20 per tilt. He's getting plenty of run at about 30 minutes per game. And if I'm not mistaken, he's averaging 8-9 assists per game. Thoughts on the fit? Because I think this was a big question mark, right, when Cleveland made this deal bringing in James Harden. But now that we've seen it over the course of 8 or 9 games, what are your thoughts on what James Harden's been able to do?
So I thought it would be a pretty good fit because Garland just wasn't playing. And when Garland did play, he's playing. He's been hampered by his foot injuries, toe injuries. So getting something was better than nothing. And Harden was really good this year. He's been really, really good. Me and you talk about playing time, though. It's regular season Harden. I have no doubt he's going to show up and give you his 20-9-8 and, you know, some highlight floaters and step-back threes. I have no doubt about that regular season, especially going to a new team, right, when that adrenaline's kind of pumping. I got to see the playoff crucible. Can James Harden change the narrative about him that he himself has built where he'll have a good game and then 2 horrible games in the playoffs, but the pressure seems like it gets him sometimes. So, I get why Cleveland did it. They kind of were to the point where almost similar to Orlando, they have a lot of big contracts, and if you're not contending, what are you doing? So they kind of pivoted on the fly to give themselves some flexibility, and I think they did that. And they're better in the short term. We won't know until the playoffs start if they're better long term.
Again, James Hollis joining us right now as we talk NBA basketball. James, your perspective on the final 20 games of the regular season, because you and I always have the conversation about we're not going to talk about what teams are until we hit the 20-game mark to start the season. Now, as we get to the final 20 games of the regular season, what do you look for?
So the final 20 games, obviously, it's about getting your key guys rest when you can, but also maintaining your edge and your playoff rhythm. So I don't think there's any team that's going to just start sitting their starters wholesale down the stretch, especially the last 4 or 5 games, because I don't think a team can really afford to do that right now. we do know there are teams who will be sitting key guys because they're tanking, right? We know this is like maybe the last one, the last years where a team can get off, for lack of a better term, a clean tank without some kind of repercussion. So, and we know the teams. We know what's going to happen. So we're going to see some really wonky results down the stretch as teams jockey for position to get in the playoffs and jockey for position to stay out of the playoffs. But it's really about, I think, like you said, you made a point earlier, the Knicks, the Cavaliers, and the Sixers have to really try to come up with some sharp playoff rotations and really try to find an advantage there. The Thunder have to try to get everyone healthy. The Spurs have to figure out, I think the Spurs have to be the Spurs, and the Nuggets also have to try to find a working formula with Aaron Gordon dealing with that hamstring injury because they've been looking a little shaky too. So we do have a lot of storylines to watch as we get down towards the final end of the season where normally it's kind of dog days, but I think things are really – I love the competitiveness of the current NBA.
You mentioned tanking. Anytime that gets brought up, the Utah Jazz right now seem to be the poster child for it. They have 20 games left in the regular season. I know Jazz fans are looking more forward to the offseason because the storylines there are plentiful, especially after the deadline deals that they have made. I saw this interesting tidbit, and I never really thought of it in this way. So you and I had the talk, I remember, right before the draft lottery. And I remember asking you, what if Dallas wins this lottery? And we kind of laughed about it, right? Well, Dallas wins the lottery. The NBA really checking in on what the Jazz are doing, sending a specialist to make sure that Lauri Markkanen is really hurt. The Jazz getting pegged hundreds of thousands of dollars for tanking. Yet it seems like any point in time where the NBA's lottery system is questioned, they want to clap back at it almost immediately, and it comes with sanctions, right? It's funny to look at this from both sides, where recently I'm just looking at it from a team perspective of saying, well, you shouldn't be tanking. But in the same sense, it's fair to bring up the idea of, well, maybe the NBA has tinkered with the lottery a little bit, and that's why we don't get to see it live.
I just don't understand, again, how the Sixers had the most blatant tank ever for multiple seasons in a row, and now we have this tremendous problem. But yeah. It is a problem, man.
It is.
You got fans paying for this this product, and now we don't see the lottery live anymore. So how much do you trust it? NBA is an entertainment league. It is about competition on the face of things, but there is the conspiracy theorists can come out and say, how much do we really trust what's happening right now?
I don't.
And the draft lottery.
I don't trust it at all. I think it's fair to question it. I think anything that's done behind closed doors and done in a fashion where it could be really simple, but it's not simple. I think people have this idea that the lottery is kind of decided just by, we're throwing all these balls in and we're just going to draw the balls out one at a time. That's not the way it works.
Yeah, and you know what? I agree with if you're saying that maybe we should actually revert back to the old way and have it, live with the balls in the hopper and you reach in and have them. That I would be open to that because it does add a level of transparency and it does take away that whole aspect of the conspiracy theorists, which might not be wrong. And I don't know why they wouldn't, right? It's also about fan engagement. It's also, even if it's for 15 minutes, it's must-see TV as everyone tunes in to see who wins the lottery. I don't know why they wouldn't. So that's a great question to raise.
Last question before I let you go. I want to get your thoughts on Kawhi Leonard. You and I have not had an opportunity to talk about this and the idea that his contract may be void. Does the NBA really go that direction in this whole fiasco, or is Kawhi Leonard a Clipper next year?
You know what? It sounded ridiculous when I first heard it, but the more that people talk about it, people that we know and trust and really are in basketball talk about it, it's got to be a real possibility. I have no idea about the percentages of it, but it's that would be unprecedented, right, for a player of his caliber and already a few years into his contract to have that happen. We know what happened to Joe Smith back in the day, right, with the whole Timberwolves, Joe Smith had his voided and whatever.
Yep.
So I'm going to say no. I think there's enough smoke where there's a fire here. We know that Pablo Torres has done enough on this story. And, like, this is all verifiable things where there's enough things to question that I think we're past the point of it being a suspected thing. Something happened that shouldn't have happened. What the NBA is going to do? Are they going to hold Ballmer's feet to the fire? We shall see. But I think there's a really good chance Kawhi Leonard might be a free agent next year.
He is James Holas, always kind enough to join us to talk NBA basketball. James, before I let you go, let's talk about where we can find more of you.
All social media. I just talk basketball and NBA, and I retweet Celtics praise, and I retweet Knicks and Sixers slander when I can. Snotty Drippin, homage to the great Scottie Pippen with Chicago Bulls, one of my favorite players growing up. So, yeah, just come over and just talk some hoops and talk some nonsense with me.
James, always a pleasure. Can't wait to do it again next week. Thank you again for the time.
You're the man, bro. Thanks for having me on.
And with that, we are out of time on this edition of Drive Time Sports. We're going to be back to do it again tomorrow. We got plenty to get into, including more NFL topics as a couple of trades, again, that we talked about earlier have gone down. We'll get into that. We'll also continue to preview the spring sports season, which is now officially off and rolling as the Dinos are playing soccer right now at home against Salem Hills. Always fun to be along with you on the afternoon drive. We'll see you tomorrow. Be safe. I am out.